Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 a.m. at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. We invite you to check out our website at gostonebridge.com and follow us on Twitter, where our handle is at SBChurch, and give us a like on Facebook at facebook.com/gostonebridge. This week, Pastor Steve Bradley kicks off our Christmas series, Finding Calm in a Chaotic World. Now here's Pastor Steve.
Oh yes, that is just too funny, isn't it? My favorite part, two favorite parts, is the football bouncing off his head, and I didn't get a chance to be the one throwing it. But did you notice that the dog was still trying to do the right thing? In fact, you don't know this, but when they were filming this, the dog, they kept saying, you know, trying to get the dog to get up and get the turkey leg, and the dog is thinking that, no, I'm going to get in trouble if I get up there and get that. And finally, they had to, as they're filming, get everyone to turn their back to the dog. And it was about 5 minutes to finally get the dog to get up there and get the turkey leg. And, of course, now the dog steals out of the refrigerator all the time because they taught the dog a bad thing. Look, we're going to be talking about finding calm in the midst of a chaotic world, because in one way that's sort of a description of Christmas, isn't it? You know, if you go back to Luke, maybe you memorized in the Gospel according to Luke. Most of you, if you did, you did it out of the King James Version, the Christmas story. Right? Anybody memorize when you were young the Christmas story? And there were in the same country, not the dog. There were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock. And so if you memorize this, you go down. At one point, the heavenly host arrives, and the heavenly host starts singing and shouting this one thing. What do you remember? Glory to God in the highest, and on earth what? Peace, goodwill toward men. Wow. And you think, that's not always Christmas. There are a lot of times that there's no peace at Christmas, that there seems to be, you know, no calm. There's more stress, more struggle. And listen, I understand for a lot of people, and the older you get, this certainly happens to you. For a lot of people at Christmas time, there are memories and thoughts and circumstances and things you go through and things that other people go through that you say they're just not very peaceful or they're not very joyful. This is a difficult time for a lot of people. And I think it's worth taking a look at it and saying, why is that? Is it possible that we are missing something about Christmas that we're not supposed to miss, that would change everything? This, when we were doing this title, Calm in a Chaotic World, there's this one song that a guy named Chris Rice, I love Chris Rice, and he writes songs that are kind of verse-oriented, but he's much a poet as well as a songwriter. And he has this song that is called Welcome to Our World. Anybody know Welcome to Our World? Beautiful song. I mean, it's just one of those songs that you go like, whoa, man, welcome to our world. What? I mean, great Christmas stuff. But I remember when we were going over this and I was thinking about that song, I thought he should have called it Welcome to Our Chaotic World. Welcome to our messed up world. Welcome to our world just full of struggles and calamity and difficulties. Then I did this. In fact, you can do this. You can go in YouTube his song, Welcome to Our World, Chris Rice, and you will notice in his verses, that's exactly what he sang about. He sang about our struggles. In one verse, he says, hope that you don't mind our manger, you know, because we didn't plan very well. We didn't realize what you were going to do. We didn't catch it. We didn't get it. We didn't understand. We've really kind of made a mess of everything that you've given us. And Welcome to Our World is kind of like, the song is kind of like an apology, you know, sorry, but at the same time, a realization that, but this is how we're going to be rescued. This is how we're going to be saved. So I want to ask you this question. In fact, this is a good one for you to talk about over lunch with your friends. Why is the world so chaotic? Why is there such chaos in the world? Why is there so much struggle in the world? Why is it so difficult, even during Christmas time, to find the peace, the calm, the things that you think Christmas should be about? Why is it so difficult to find those things? And, you know, of course, I'm going to go to, being someone who preaches a lot, I'm going to go to the beginning of the source is always with us. The beginning is our own sin, isn't it? And we're the source of so much chaos. There's so much struggle inside of us. There's so much difficulty that we have with our own lives and feeling as if we are close to God, that we are connected to God, because Christmas is all about God coming down to us, God sending His Son to us to reconnect us to Himself. But you would also look around and you say, yeah, but it's not just me. I look around and the whole world's a mess, right? I mean, as much as I would like it to be different, there's chaos all throughout the world. Absolutely. Because it's not just my sin, it's the sin of other people. It's the sin of whole nations, whole communities. It's the sin of the world that just seems to have this bent toward doing the wrong thing, to going the wrong direction. So let me help you with this. Christmas really is the answer. Let me tell you why. Because what we do, how we fix our world, is we think I need to go and fix all of the things in the world. In fact, most of us, you know, say, think of it this way. Do you think of it this way? I do. I think, listen, if all of you guys would just do the right thing, I'd be okay. Anybody think that way? Well, you get to stand up here one day and say that. Yeah, if all you guys, if you just did it the way I want you to do it, if you just behave the way I think you should behave, because after all, I'm just a product of my own environment, of my own culture. And if so, if my culture would do the right thing, if my culture wouldn't be so messed up, you know, I wouldn't be messed up. Anybody think that's true? Seriously, I'm not joking. I'm not clowning around, but I will call on you. Anybody think that's true? When we really get down to it, we realize, no, something wrong with that thinking. Earlier this year, I was doing a whole series talking about, you know, fixing things, and one of the things I kept coming to was, you can't fix the world. You can't fix the world. You wish that you could. I was in another country halfway around the world, and I did it with all those that were there with a translator and said, you know, here's one of the things you have to be all right with. You can't fix the world. And it was funny because it's the same reaction that you have here. People going like, and the more you try to fix the world, or it comes from the idea, but if the world would just get fixed, I would be okay. You know, my problems wouldn't be big problems. If everyone would just, and what we mean by fix the world, if everyone would just do things the way I want them to be done, if you would just kind of, you know, get in line and figure out what I want and what my desire is, if you would just jump into that line. Now, listen, I want you to catch this. That is sin. That's the heart of sin. That's the heart of my sin, my struggles, my problems. I think I want the world to yield to who? Me. And the problem is that won't fix the world. The world's never going to be fixed until the world yields to who? Yeah, the maker of the world, the creator of the world, the one who designed it, the one who had the path, the patterns, not the world yielding to me. And so one of the things that happens at Christmas is God, in the midst of your chaos, in the midst of all the things that you've got going wrong and are going wrong around you, God draws you to Himself to draw you to an answer which is not you. You are not the answer. In fact, I love to say it this way. You can fix the world. You can. You can fix the world. And, you know, like most preachers, here's the one simple step. I'm going to give you one quick, simple step. If you can do this one thing, you can fix the world. Here you go. You want to write this one down? Fix yourself. Because if you can fix yourself, you can fix the world. And I know you're thinking, but nobody can do that. Absolutely. That's the problem, isn't it? None of us can do that. We can't fix ourselves. We struggle with, how do I fix myself? In fact, I love it. Good Housekeeping, they came up with an article years ago, right around Christmas time, and they talked about finding peace and finding comfort and finding forgiveness in it. And the long of the article was, listen, if you were a believer, if you're a Christian, if you understand who God is, Good Housekeeping did this, you understand who God is, what God has done, what Christmas means about who Jesus is, this is what you do. You go and you find forgiveness and you find healing and you find comfort and you find a new life and a whole new approach to life in Jesus Christ, who gave His life for you. That's what you find, what you're looking for. And then I love it because they did one little paragraph, said, oh, okay, incidentally, if you're not a Christian, just blow it off and move on. That was their answer. I was like, okay, right? You know what it meant? You know what they were trying to say? We don't have a fix for you. There's no way for you to do it because you can't fix yourself. If you think you're going to fix yourself, this is what you'll end up doing. You'll say, hey, I'm better than most people. Yeah, that fixes it. Or everybody messes up. Just blow it off. You know, just act like it doesn't matter. In other words, ignore it or pretend it's not there. Okay, yeah, that's a really good fix. That works really well. Just kind of stuff your feelings, your sense of guilt, your sense of don't measure up. Why do I keep messing up? Just take that and stuff it somewhere, you know, where you don't have to look at it and you don't have to deal with it. And just say, as they said in the article, just say, hey, you know, everybody has problems. And then just move on. Yeah, that fixes it. Of course it doesn't fix it. Because the chaos is still there. The struggles are still there. The difficulties, those things are actually still there. So how do you fix your world? How do you find an answer to the struggle and the chaos, the sin that I have, just like you have, that says my only understanding of fixing it is everybody's got to do things my way. Not going to work that way. So let me take you, this is kind of a, I like kind of starting at the beginning, so I want to go all the way back to Genesis, but we're not going that far. And I want to go back to just kind of the struggle that in the Bible that Israel had, Old Testament and New Testament, with Hebrews and Israel and Christians. Same struggle is absolutely apparent. It is absolutely there. And if you look at the lives and the verses and all the things of all those who went through it, they were struggling with the same things that you struggle with and that I struggle with. They just happened to live in a different time, and so it came out a little different. And there's this one Psalm 108. And I know you think, there were that many psalms? There are actually 150 of them. A lot of them. David writes it near the end of his life, and I stole this from a commentary, Wolford and Zook's commentary on the Bible, and it'll pop up on the screen, I think. There it is. Because David believed, and this was David's belief. Now remember, David is described as the man after God's own heart. Because David believed that God would be exalted, he would be lifted up, he would be magnified and made more clear by the subjugation of the nations. Subjugation means when they, you know, become subject to him, when they are humble, when the powers and the nations and people, you know, end up kind of getting knocked down to this spot. Because he believed that. He believed that it wasn't the nations rising up, but instead the nations being subjugated, because he believed that. What do you think he also believed, or what do you think David also did? I left space in there for you to, you might want to write a few things down, what you think David did. Let me give you two things real quickly. Here's what David did. First of all, David put his hope and his trust in the compassion of God, because David understood, my hope and my trust can't be in me. God will be exalted when everything and all the powers are put in their proper place underneath him. And the second thing that David believed then what I should ask for. In fact, this is what I think you should ask for, and it's what I should ask for daily, and you have to do it daily, constantly say, God, you lead me and you guide me. You're the only one, because I don't know the way. If we try to do it my way, I'll just make a bigger mess of everything. I'll just make things worse. I'll make things more chaotic and more confusing and more of a struggle. But if you lead, if you come up and show your ways and you teach me to believe and trust and bank on your compassion, listen, it's that. That's where I find the answer to my own sin, my wanting it my way. And that is following in your way. Here's Psalm 108. You can read the whole thing later, but I just gave you a couple of verses here just to sort of point this out. This is what it says in verse number 6. I love this. In fact, if you have a pen or a pencil, you might want to underline this. That your beloved, and in my Bible, that is highlighted and circled, that your beloved may be delivered. Save with your right hand and answer me. Now, some people would say, well, he may be talking about your beloved. That may actually be prophetic about Christ himself. It might be. He might be talking about Israel. He might be. He might be talking about me. As his beloved. I mean, that's the picture in the Bible, all over the Bible, is that for God so loved who? Yeah, us. That he did these things. That your beloved would be rescued. That your beloved would be saved. And so David is constantly one of those guys who is banking on exactly that. David didn't look at his life and say, my problem, my sin is that I don't do everything right. David didn't do that. He said, my sin of not doing everything right is an evidence that something's wrong in here. And David understood that in here was where the fix had to take place, because this is where it all came from. And so this could be fixed. If I could learn to love you and trust you and believe you and put my hope in you, that's where this desire that says, but I want it my way, I want to do things my, that's where this gets fixed. And then the other things get fixed. See, you can fix or try. You can't fix them, but you can try to go out and fix all the things that you do on the outside and say, I'm going to fix all those things. I'm no longer going to be broken. I'm not going to do the wrong things. It's not going to work. You're going to fail, because all that comes from somewhere. So if that doesn't get fixed, you can't fix the things you do on the outside, because you still are coming from this idea that, but I want things my way. I want the world to work my way. I want everyone else to work my way. Here's the second verse that I put in your outline, verse 12. He says, oh, give us help against the adversary, the one who's against us. And I love this part. He says, for deliverance by man, say it with me, is what? It's in vain. In other words, we can't fix it, God. So can you help us against our enemy? Can you help us against the things we struggle with? Because man can't fix himself. He can't. Do you know even Jesus hinted toward this? Jesus said he's in his own hometown. It was early on, after when he was about 30 years old, and he's there doing things, and he's rejected because they say, now we know him. And Jesus even says, the time will come when I know I'm going to hear this. They're going to say to me, hey, fix yourself. If you're the Son of God, heal yourself. If you're God, okay, then rescue yourself. And he said, I know that's going to be used against me one day. Physician, heal thyself. And he says, I know that's going to be used against me one day. And it was, because they justified, when Jesus was crucified, they justified, listen, if he's the Son of God, if we're killing God, could we get away with this? And the problem is they didn't understand what was going on. Because Jesus actually does heal himself. 3 days later, what happens? He walks out of the grave, never to be subject to death again. He conquers the grave. In Romans chapter number 8, this is what Paul writes about you and I. He said, the same power that raised Jesus Christ from the grave, which means was their victory, was Christ's justification, that yes, it's fixed. He fixed it. The same power that raised him from the grave will also raise who? Anybody know? Hopefully you're one of them. Same power will raise us. Yeah, that we're raised by the same thing, by Christ's sacrifice, by the power of his righteousness, by the gift that he gave. That's what rescues us. That's why Christmas is so powerful and so important. Because it's at Christmas 2,000 years ago when all of a sudden the promise that God had that he would rescue, the promise is realized for the first time in flesh and blood. They see him in flesh and blood, and they never understood before. So before that, they would read things, try to understand things, speculate about things. Most of the time, they would fall back into, Israel constantly fell back into, quote, fixing themselves. But what they really fell back into was the same thing you and I do. They fell back into doing it my way. But I'm going to do it religiously my way. I'm going to do it by, you know, some laws and rules and eat the right thing my way. Or I'm going to pretend that I worship God. And when the whole point of it was, yeah, but are you looking to God, trusting God daily, surrendering to God, and say, God, the truth is it's only your way that's going to do it. And they weren't doing that. And so God constantly allowed them to fall into what they were seeking and chasing after. If they were trying to chase after being like Egypt, okay, it's not going to turn out well. If they want to chase and be like Syria, okay, go ahead, chase after them. You won't like how it works out. And then as they would get, you know, desperate enough, they would cry out to God and say, God, please help us. And this is where, in the Old Testament, where the prophets came in. And the prophets would come, and they would speak things from God and say, even though you've messed up, even though you've chased after the wrong things, even though you think God is angry with you, and that God is punishing you and God's trying to hurt you. God is not punishing you or trying to hurt you. God is trying to get your attention. God is trying to correct you. And you know, that's a great word for you and I at Christmas. Because when I look at the world and there's chaos out there. Listen, there's a mess out there. There's consumerism out there. Just, doesn't it? Just blows your mind. Just, I mean, I go to the mailbox every afternoon and I can't even get the stuff out of the mailbox. It's so stuffed. And I'm like, I've never ordered anything from these people. What are these magazines? Where did this come from? And you know, they're just constantly trying to convince me, if you don't have these things, you're not going to be happy in life. You need these things to be content in life. You need these things or your life, it doesn't amount to anything. It's a constant thing. I live in a world just like this. I understand. But God is the one that comes and says, yeah, but there's a rescuer. There's a way that you can live and you can find peace. You can find calm. You can find what you're looking for even in the midst of all this. So if you're feeling all of that stress and you're feeling all of those negative feelings and all those sadness to come, listen, that Christmas is your time. Christmas is your time. This is when God says, but there is an answer. There is a rescuer. He will take you away from all these things. And this is what Isaiah writes about, because he was one of those prophets back in about 700 B.C., which was having to write at the time of trying to correct Israel and trying to get their attention. And what Isaiah did was he wrote constantly about the rescue of God. So there are a lot of passages in Isaiah's prophecy that talk about the Messiah coming, because they didn't understand who the Messiah was. They didn't understand how it was going to work. And so here is, this is from Isaiah chapter number 9. This is the chaos I put in there, reminding us to look somewhere else for the light that we're really looking for. Here's what it says. You can read along with me if you'd like to in your outline. I've given you some space to take some notes if you'd like to do this. Here's what he says beginning of verse 1. Nevertheless, that time of darkness and despair, say this with me, will not go on what? It's not going to last forever. I understand this is a time you're struggling, but it's not going to go on forever. Isaiah says the land of Zebulun and Naphtali will be humbled. Yeah. But there will be a time in the future when Galilee of the Gentiles, which lies along the road that runs between the Jordan and the sea, will be filled with what? Glory. Whoa, now wait a minute. What about the land of Israel? I'm just telling you that there's a time coming when the glory of God will go even beyond what you were hoping for, what you were thinking. Verse 2, he says, the people who walk in darkness, here's this great contrast. People who walk in darkness will see a great what? Light. For those who live in the land of deep darkness, a light will shine. Verse 3, he says, you will enlarge the nation of Israel, and its people will rejoice. They will rejoice before you. It doesn't mean they get their way or things work the way they wanted to. It's a turning back and a trust back to God. And he says, and people will rejoice at the harvest and like warriors dividing the plunder. I know some people might think, well, I wish he wouldn't have used that example. Got to remember what time they were living in, right? And so they were living in a time where they all understood the time of harvest. You plant, you work the ground, you have to take care of it. Do the rains come when they're supposed to? And you have to wait patiently. But when you wait patiently, there's a time of harvest coming. And what would they do at the time of harvest? They would celebrate. They would rejoice. We just went through, our national celebration and rejoicing of the time of harvest. That's what Thanksgiving is. That's what it was for them also. But he also says it's like warriors who rejoice and they cheer of the plunder, because they were warlike. There were a lot of battles that went on. And so he's using this as an example. They would understand. So when you win the war, after the pain is over and the fighting and the horror of war is over, then there's the celebration because of the good things that you get after that. And he's using this as an example. Look at verse number 4. He says this. He says, for you, not talking about them as people, he's talking now about God himself. He says, for you will break the yoke of their slavery, and you will lift the heavy burden from their shoulders. You will break the oppressor's rod, just as you did when you destroyed the army of Midian. Verse 5, he says, the boots of the warriors and the uniforms bloodstained by war will be burned There will be fuel for the fire. And don't you love verse 6? He says, this is strange to them, for a child is born to us. Wait, we just went from war and harvest and battles and victory, and somehow we went all the way down to a child is born for us. Yeah, see, we understand it because we're looking back. We understand about who Jesus was and how God actually rescued us in here through Christ himself. But it was a difficult thing for them. He says, for a child is born to us. A son is given to us. The government will rest on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. His government and its peace will never end. He will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. The passionate commitment of the Lord of heaven's armies, he will make this happen. Isaiah actually talks about a couple of chapters before. He talks about that when this child comes, he says he will be called. There's this name that we sing about at Christmas time, which is a kind of a wonderful name as far as the content of the name. He will be called Emmanuel. Isn't that a great word? I love words like that. That's just me. You know, if Joni and I have another kid in our old age, we're going to name him Emmanuel. No, we're not going to do that. So. And she says, don't say things like that, but Emmanuel. And Emmanuel is not just a name. Emmanuel was an expression for them. It was an understanding. In fact, if you go and you read in Isaiah's prophecies in the 7th chapter and you go into the 8th chapter, you see it not in name form, but you actually see the exact same thing in descriptive form. It is, the name means, anybody know what the name means? Emmanuel means what? God with us, right? It means God with L. When they would put L on the back of a word, that was the name of God. And so it meant with us, God. God has come to be with us. And so Isaiah, this is one of his themes. He talks about God coming and being with us, not being off in the heavens somewhere, not distant, not away from us, but God being with us. And so this child will be named Emmanuel. It means it's a descriptive name. It means he will be God come to be with us. John in his gospel, That's what he writes about. He talks about the Word, and he talks about the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And he says, and then you know, it goes in this description of John coming to announce the coming of Christ, and you realize that is what it was talking about. Christ is the thing that was spoken of long before that made the heavens, and he made the earth. And it says all the way down, I think it's in verse number 14, it says, and so the Word took on flesh and blood. And I love the paraphrase called The Message. It says, he took on flesh and blood and he moved into our neighborhood. Isn't that great? Literally means, and he came to dwell among us. He moved next door. I know you're thinking, there goes the neighborhood. Oh my goodness. You know, there's a little manger and some sheep out in the field. Yeah. And the reason Jesus came like that is instead of a conqueror and a king is so that you would understand that he came to live in your heart and in your life. And that manger, that lowly place, is a much more accurate description of this than some palace or some magnificent place or some place of power. That's a much more accurate description of this heart, of your heart. And you make a place in here and you say, I don't understand, how could that make a difference? How could that change anything? And it changes everything. It changes everything. 2,000 years ago, changed everything. The world has been different ever since. And it's moving toward a conclusion that Emmanuel, God with us, has come to change the heart. He's come to change the heart. Years ago, when I was younger, there was a singer, a lady that you might not know, maybe you do, named Cynthia Clawson. Anybody know who Cynthia Clawson is? I had red hair, bright red hair at the time, and it has faded away since. Because I use that fadeaway color stuff. And so, Cynthia was a redhead, and she was just an incredible singer, and she's very artistic. So when Cynthia would sing, I got to be around her and her husband, Reagan Courtney, and she'd kind of, all over the place when she would sing. I couldn't do that, But I loved watching her and listening to her, and her voice control was amazing. One time, I'm in a service. I'm way up in the balcony, and she comes in, and there're probably about 1,500 people in this giant colonial-style church, and she comes walking out, their orchestra and everything, and they use none of the orchestra. She just walks up in complete silence because people knew who she was. And all of a sudden, she started singing this. And it still sticks with me. It's still in my head during Christmas. She just goes, oh, come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel that mourns in lowly exile here. Until the Son of God appear. You know the chorus? Sing it with me. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall ransom captive Israel. And I thought, oh, thank you, but don't applaud me. I didn't write the song and didn't, but we applaud the one who came, right? And in the stillness, the silence, the simplicity of it, when everything else is turned off and nothing else matters, right? Then all of a sudden we realize just what God did. Not just to the world as Christ came to be born in that manger, but for me. If in the stillness and in the silence and in the understanding of it, I will make a place here and say, Lord, come be born here. Change me here. We're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper together, reminded of the great gift that God gave us. So would you join me as we prepare and pray together? Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you. You know our need. You understand us even when we don't understand ourselves. You know what our real struggle, our real sin is. And how difficult for it is for us to see it, to understand it. We just miss it so many times. We look at so many things in the world thinking that's the problem. And we have a hard time stopping and looking at our own hearts, our own willingness to say, you be Lord, you be King. Let's do it your way, not my way. We just have a hard time grasping that, understanding it. So Father, this morning is, as we remember that Jesus came as a light to the world, a light in the darkness, in that dark place that so desperately needs a light, your light, to shine in our hearts. He came to stir a new fire, bring a new peace and a new calm, to light and to ignite a new sense of joy, of well-being, so that we could look at the days ahead, we could look at the future, and know that it is going to end well. It's going to be a good thing, because you've never forgotten about us. And always in your love and your compassion, you are the one who is compelling us to trust you, to believe and to trust your way. So, Father, as we come to celebrate and to remember, once again, Lord, we pray that you would place that peace and that joy in our hearts. In Jesus' name we pray.